I'm speaking today with Councilmember Ronald Green, who is the incumbent in at-large number 4 and who is running for the position of city controller. Councilmember, first question I'd like to ask is, why are you running for the office of controller?
Well, I am running for the office of controller because it's a finance position, and that's what I've gravitated towards since I've been on city council. I've chaired budget and fiscal affairs. I think it's a natural progression for me. I've learned so much as a council member dealing with finance that I think that the city could benefit from what I've learned from the controller's position.
Now, you've been a council member for 2 terms. This is your 3rd term. Tell me what you think your top 3 accomplishments as council member have been.
I'll work backwards. One of the most recent things I've done is I've actually been able to go to Washington, D.C., and advocate on behalf of the city and win an appeal for FEMA reimbursement. I was able to use my skills as a lawyer combined with my finance skills to bring home $2.4 million that the city could benefit from, real dollars that we've needed, that we expended, that helps us with our budget. One of the other things is I've also put in a designation policy in place on council, in the controller's office or in the investment side, that allows us to solicit investment banking experience and ideas from bankers that inures to the benefit of the city, in that they get paid without us paying them. They get paid on the sale of their bonds. But what they also do is they bring good ideas to us. They walk away feeling like they've been compensated for bringing those good ideas, and the city of Houston benefits from that. That's on the financial side. On the other side, one of the most global accomplishments that I've done has been a voice of reason. After representing the citywide for 5 years, I'm always the person that you can count on that'll weigh the issues and analyze the issues, and can sometimes bring people on either side of an issue. And all of that, I think, is what you need, somebody who has a global perspective. And I'm very proud of that.
What would you say would be your top 3 priorities as city controller?
First of all, getting a handle on our debt. The city has a great investment portfolio of over $2 billion. We have a more than $12 billion in debt, so we do have some things out there that could come to bite us in the future. We've got great credit ratings, so for us, the debt portfolio is manageable, but I think we can squeeze some more dollars out of that. The second thing is I'd like to do more compliance audits. We've done a lot of performance audits, and I think that those have been good to tell us what we do internally. The compliance audits have to deal with how we deal with the outside contractors. Are they delivering? Are we delivering? And I think that's going to be important. Thirdly, I'd like to see more communication from our perspective, not just transparency, but communication for the average citizen to figure out what it is we do with this $4.1 billion that flows through the city annually. What do we do with it? How much of the pie goes to your parks? How much of the pie goes to debt service? How much goes to police? I'd like to see us break it down really in layman's terms. In addition to being the watchdog, communicating is going to be key.
Now let's talk a little bit about the budget and the city's current financial situation. Let's start sort of at a high level. What is your assessment of the city's financial situation? Is it, worse than we think, better than we think, about what we think?
I think it's better than we think. And let me tell you why. Because the city of Houston, comparatively to any other city in this country, any other major city, we're doing well. We're like everybody else. We're having to tighten our belt. And we do have some gaps in our budget that by the end of the budget year, they will be filled. I don't practice this chicken little finance that the sky is falling, but I do believe that we should be prepared for the bad. But when the good comes through, we make a benefit out of it. You hear on the high end that we're about $103 million in a deficit. On the low end, you hear about $25 million. The fact of the matter is we have spent some of our reserves, and that pretty much is kind of your rainy day situation. It's raining right now, so we pulled out our umbrella. But that model won't help us going forward. So you're going to see some cuts in expenditures, and hopefully no cuts in services.
Now, why is it that Controller Parker and Mayor White disagree on the size of the deficit that the city is currently facing? And, who do you think is correct in this argument?
I think they're both correct. The controller's job is to probably be a little more conservative than the administration, to make sure that citizens know where all the money come from to fill the gap. We voted on a budget that used reserve funds. the controller is including that $51 million in reserve funds as a deficit amount. Truthfully, this year we will bring in less revenue than we have for expenses, but that's why we stacked up on our reserves in the past. The mayor has got about $25 million, and I think that his job is to make sure that people aren't panicking, as well as the controller's job, to make sure that people don't panic. But it's just a way of presenting it to people. I think from the mayor's perspective, you understand it is his budget. So obviously he doesn't want to, alarm people into thinking that we are going down the tanks, we're about to file bankruptcy. He's truthful in that the $25 million can be made up through cost savings. And I think the controller also agrees with that. But her job is just to lay out the facts and to be the person who sounds the alarm, so that later on people don't think that we don't need to cut our tighten our belts.
Now, I've heard some people say, I believe there's been some op-eds written to the effect that Houston is in a large operating deficit situation, that we have been, I guess, over the long term, spending more money than we're taking in, and maybe this has to do with capital projects. I confess I'm not much of a finance guy, so I don't quite understand all the ins and outs in that. Can you speak to that?
I can, and you have put the nail on the head. We have used long-term debt to finance long-term projects, and that's the whole purpose behind a capital improvement project plan. You amortize those long-term assets over the life of an asset, and so if you include the debt, which I think a lot of people are saying this $1.5 billion deficit over the last few years, a lot of that is our long-term debt. That's good debt. In any kind of finance situation, you've got good debt and bad debt. Also for us, we've used reserve funds over the last couple of years to balance the budget, and that's also being included in this deficit. But there's a school of thought that says that if you plan to use those reserve funds, if you held some back for the lean years, then it's really not a debt deficit. So I think that, you know, you look at the glass either half empty or half full. The fact of the matter still remains that the city is still in good financial position, that we are not going broke, that although we have a deficit, you have to understand we are not a corporation that sells widgets, so we can't beef up production. We can't charge more for the widgets we sell. 75% of our budget goes to people's salaries. We deliver service. So for us, we don't want to cut service. That's what the taxpayer pays for. So that's why we go into a situation of amortizing our long-term debt and also using reserve funds over the last couple of years to make sure that we fill the budget gap.
Now, it seems like one of the city's biggest expenses, and that has been growing, is pension obligations. There was some refinancing and stuff done with the pension board a couple of years ago, and it seems like there's been some ongoing tension between the mayor and the pension board. Where do we stand in terms of our pension obligations? How much do we owe as far as that goes, and what, if anything, can be done to mitigate those obligations?
Like every other city, every other pension fund in the entire country, it's underfunded. We're about 67% funded on the municipal employees pension fund. You know, we also have the firefighters pension fund, and we also have the police officers pension fund. Three separate funds that are governed by three separate boards. The obligations that we have, the city of Houston has issued some debt, and we've also made some cash payments. The model's got to change. We're going to have to start paying more up front for our pension obligations in order to meet those long-term needs. The good thing about it is that the investment horizon is long enough so that even with it being underfunded now, as long as everybody doesn't retire tomorrow, the city of Houston is still in good financial shape. But every pension fund, you have to look at it, has lost money over the last couple of years. So all of the gains that we made, I think we lost just like anybody else. So we've got to be very careful with that. But in the long term, it's going to be more of the general fund money devoted to the pension fund. It will be probably less pension obligation bonds. But if we keep a constant strategy as the market improves, so do the pension funds. So it's not a time to panic about it, but it's a time to make sure that when over the next years, the next 10, 15, 20 years, that we increase our contribution. And I think that we're still fine with that.
Now, it seems like in most discussions of city's financial situation, the focus is always on how much we're spending, our expenditures, our obligations, and so on and so forth. seems to me like there's not all that much discussion about the revenue side. Now, in many of the interviews I talk to, people talk about, you know, bringing in more business to, you know, to improve tax collections. I'm wondering, you know, it seems like the city has made a number of small tax cuts in the property tax rate over the past few years. You know, how much has that cost us, and, you know, is that a wise thing to be doing?
Well, going forward, it's not going to be a wise thing. That's why you saw that we didn't cut it on this last budget. We did it 5 years in a row. I voted on five budgets that cut the tax rate, and I think partly what that does is it instills confidence in individuals in that your government is really looking out for you in addition to running a well-run city. Even when we cut the tax rate, we were still able to build up hefty cash reserves. It was prudent at that time. I think it was the right thing to do. Did we get leaner in some areas? Yes. But the amount of budget, the amount of tax rate that we cut over the last 5 years still would not put us in a position now to not have a deficit or not have budget gaps. I think what we do going forward is that model won't work anymore. I think people understand that we're going to have to pay for infrastructure, we're going to have to pay for parks, we're going to have to pay for all of that. And I think people understand now that the city is being well run, but they do understand that the tax rate, certainly none of us are advocating raising it. But what we do want to advocate is expanding it horizontally. And I'm one of those people who does advocate getting more buildings on the tax roll, getting more houses on the tax roll. But it's a cycle that everything has to work together. You have to be able to attract more business here, to get more people to buy homes here, to get more businesses here, to increase the sales tax rate. So all those pieces move together. Don't look for a budget cut. I think maybe one mayoral candidate is advocating it, but don't look for a tax rate cut. I don't think you'll see that anytime soon, just because things are more expensive now. The city has to pay gasoline. It's down now, but we still have to look forward to in the future whether gas prices go up, the price of natural gas goes up, electricity. All of those things have to be factored in the budget. So I think now we know that Houston is kind of like in accounting terms, we're the last in of this recession, but hopefully we'll be the first out.
I mean, from a policy perspective, what can the controller do to affect some of these things, to affect business growth and development and the revenue stream? You know, it's obvious what the mayor can do, and it's obvious what city council can do. What can the controller do from a policy perspective?
Well, one, you accurate forecasting. The controller is still an elected official. It's a person who still has constituents. And what works well with what the mayor does by advocating, the controller can do the same thing. There's nothing wrong with the controller going out and trying to attract businesses. Look, this is a good financial climate to do business. We've done XYZ with the funds that we have. It makes sense for you to move here. So I think you make the financial case. From a policy perspective, you put out accurate numbers. You tell people where it makes sense to give tax abatements where they need to be. I think from our perspective, we'll say, okay, this makes sense. This brings us XYZ jobs. This will bring XYZ houses on the tax roll. A lot of that, what you do is basically the advocacy part. But you do it based on the numbers.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about audit, since I think that's probably the most visible thing other than talking about future deficits that a controller does. You mentioned, you know, compliance versus performance audits. Talk a little bit more about that and where you think we ought to be doing some compliance audits.
The city does a lot of contracting. Most of what we do when those streets are getting worked on outside of your home, that's really not a city crew. That's typically a contractor who we hire to do that. We want to make sure that we are living up to the terms of the contract in place and that the contractor is living up to the terms in place. That has to do with service. That has to do with the product that we get. We buy a lot of materials. We need to make sure that we get what we pay for. And it's just as simple as that. It's not as simple as just going out with your clipboard and making sure we got eight lawnmowers and we bought eight lawnmowers. But in reality, that's a lot of what a compliance audit does. It makes sure that we are doing what the contract says we should do. In addition to compliance audits, as opposed to performance audits are telling us what we're doing good and what we're not doing so well internally. And I think that's a good thing. But at the end of the day, most of the money that we have is going outside of the city. And then we also have the revenue enhancement audits that I think that we'll see a little bit more of that as well. And that goes back and looks at what ordinances are in place, whether we're collecting, the money that's being collected is being used for the purposes of the ordinance. So I think if you use the three of them together is when you get the optimum efficiency out of audits.
Okay. In terms of, you know, I guess the performance audits where you say that we're looking at what the city is doing internally, you know, talk to me a little bit about that. There have been a lot of those done. You know, what opportunities exist there going forward?
Well, the controller has spent a lot of time doing them, and it just goes by each department. She hasn't, I don't think, done every department, but where she has found some, it's not really an operational side. It's where customer service can be had in a better way. I think the controller has done a great job of doing the audit, presenting what needs to happen. The next piece to that, is the department doing it? And I think that's where I come back behind Controller Parker in making sure that the department is fixing what needs to be fixed. And I think that an audit's no good if you don't follow the findings of an audit. So for us, they have been a valuable tool, they're a valuable management tool, but if you don't have the other piece of that, somebody doing what it actually says needs to be done, then we're kind of left out with a good audit.
Now, there was a recent story about the city working on a big, possibly complicated TERS deal with the county for things like, possible Dynamo Stadium, something to do with the Astrodome, the city's jail facility. I guess my question is, what is the wisdom of doing a deal like that? It seems like for some of these things, like perhaps the city jail facility, might best be done via, the traditional bond referendum. And some of these other things, it's not really clear what's trying to be accomplished. So, and of course, in all of these things, a TERS only works if property values go up.
Absolutely.
So, talk to me a little bit about this. What's your opinion of this, this TERS stuff that's going on?
TERS is, I'm an advocate of a good TERS, and you hit the nail on the head. It only works if the property value goes up. I think people are now taking the approach that while we're at the table, let's just throw everything in. May or may not be the best approach. If the stadiums get built, there's no doubt that I think property values will go up in and around the stadium. The jail is a necessity, and I believe that because voters voted down this jail processing facility in the past, this may be the county's opportunity to leverage its part in this whole deal to get it done. And I think at the end of the day, people want to see the governments working together. Can you make a case that, the jail ought to be separate and done through bond financing? I think, yes, you can, but I think the voters already have said that that's not what we want right now when they voted down that referendum the ability to issue the bonds in November. The stadiums, it's something that is an economic development tool. It's a big-ticket item. But we have to look at, in the long term, what the forecast is. Does it bring more business to the city of Houston? Does it bring more residents to the city of Houston? Does it increase our hotel occupancy taxes? And for that reason, it's a good thing if it ever happens. I think we've got some personality issues that are, I don't want to say interfering with it, but we just can't get on the same page. But I think at the end of the day, the public will dictate that they want to see the city work with the county and the county work with the city and us work with any other governmental agency to get the same money.
Okay. Philosophically, do you believe that the controller's office should act as like a check on the mayor's office? Obviously, in Houston, we have a strong mayor system, and the mayor largely dictates, the council agenda. The controller, of course, as we've seen with the deficit stories, the controller, can certainly act as a counterbalance. How much of that should the controller be? Do you believe the controller should be more of a partner with the mayor, or more of, more of an antagonistic relationship with the mayor's office?
Well, I don't think you are here to be an antagonist. I think that you're here to be a watchdog. That's one of the first things that you do. You are accountable to the citizens of Houston, and that's why the controller's office is not appointed. I think there are times when you have to be a partner with the mayor, and I think there are times that you may end up being an antagonist, but I don't think that is the goal. You need to make sure that you put out, as a controller, accurate information. and that council members have accurate information in order to make the best decision, because the controller doesn't get a vote on those issues that the mayor brings forth, only the council members. So I think it's a two-way street. You know, sometimes you'll lock horns with the mayor, and then it also depends on who the controller is. You know, it depends on what your politics is. It depends on a lot of things. But typically the numbers don't lie. And if you have the same numbers and you advocate based on your numbers, I think sometimes the mayor likes that, sometimes the mayor doesn't like that. But a lot of times you'll see that the mayor wants to get something done, and the controller's job is to say, look, mayor, I don't think that this is prudent. Look at the long-term effect of that. And it may look like they're being antagonists against each other, but at the end of the day, the controller is putting out what the public needs to know.
What is your assessment of Controller Parker's term in office, and how do you think you would be like her as controller or not like her?
I think she's done a good job. I've worked very well with Anise on finance issues when I chaired budget and fiscal affairs. She runs a decent department, and I think she's got some good people. She staffed up that department with some good finance professionals, so my head goes off to her. So I don't look to go in and just clean house. I look to go in and integrate myself into a system that's there. What I'd probably do the same, like she's doing, is be a hands-on controller. Be a person who's in that office that's responsible for 75 finance professionals, and not just a ceremonial controller. And that's what I'd like to do. What I may do differently, like I said, is probably concentrate on some of the other audit functions. My background as a lawyer and as a finance person, I probably gravitate more towards the debt side. That's where my expertise lies more than anything, but I still have experience in all the other divisions. So you'll probably see me a little more hands-on on the bond side.
What do you think should be the new mayor's top priority once he or she takes office?
Fiscal responsibility. And I don't even say fiscal responsibility, because we've been very fiscally responsible over the last 6 years. I think that we may have a long-term plan on how we grow this economy. And that's what the order of the day is going to be. We came in and we had a good time here. And we had good finances coming through. We had some good events coming through. But the next mayor is going to have to make some tough decisions. And I think the next mayor is going to have to take us to the next level when it comes to efficiencies, when it comes to different departments, whether they need to be merged, whether they need to be, you know, broken up. Just an overall approach to growing the city's economy.
And do you have a preferred candidate for mayor in this election?
Absolutely not. I'm running for the independent office of the controller, and I certainly I'm very glad to have worked with at least the top three candidates that are out there, Gene, Anise, and Peter. I know them very well. I think they do the city very well, and I'd be honored to work with any one of them.
Now, it seems like a lot of people who have held the office of city controller in Houston have gone on to run for other offices, including mayor, as Controller Parker, George Grianis, Sylvia Garcia. Do you have ambitions beyond the controller's office?
Most people who know me, you know I'm a daily bread type person. It's a good fit for me now, and I don't have anything past the next couple of years after I win this race. I plan on being the controller for 6 years and working hard at making it the best finance department in government. And if something comes up, I can discuss that with my boss, you know, Hillary. Depends on what we decide. But I don't, as I sit here today, I don't have any plans to run for mayor. And that's not the thing for me. You know, with two people, and I think, you know, my wife's also in government, so with two people in elected office, I think at some point, you know, one of us has to stay home and, you know, go get a job in the private sector.
Okay. Now, since you mentioned being controller for 6 years, obviously that's the terms of the current term limits law. Mayor White has recently written or suggested that, you know, perhaps it's time to revisit the term limits laws and maybe put a referendum on the ballot that would ask the voters to authorize a study of changing it. What's your opinion of that?
Two things. I believe that term limits has made some people a little lazy about turnover. But I will say this. They're not a bad thing, but I think the city of Houston's terms, 2 years, are probably too short. You work a year, you run a year, you work a year, you run a year. I don't think that's really good for the citizens. So I would be a person that would support longer terms but still have term limits.
Okay. And when people come to the ballot this November 3rd, why should they vote for you for city controller and not one of your opponents?
Well, what makes me uniquely qualified is this is going to be a race about experience. For the last 6 years, I've been on the city council. I've done nothing but the finance issues, the efficiency issues. You also want to look at the person's education, what they bring to the table. The city charter says that the controller has to be 18 years of age and that they have to live in the city of Houston. Well, I barely make the 18-year-old cutoff, and I do live in the city of Houston. But what I also have done is I'm a lawyer. I have a master's in business administration, and I'm trying to run a finance department. And I think there's nothing more disheartening for city employees who work there and people who are serviced by that department is to have a controller who doesn't know finance. So although it's an elected position, I think the voters need to say, can this controller get a job as a controller if it were not an elected position? And certainly that will lead them to Ronald Green.
Councilmember Ronald Green, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.